Hello, this is Mary Mortland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, March 15, 2018. Campus Conversation. The Graduate Employees Organization just reached a settlement with the University of Illinois after a year of negotiations and a two-week strike, the longest in U of I history. In this week's Campus Conversation, GEO Co-President Gus Wood, a graduate student in history and a Morehouse College alumnus, talks about the recent strike, his family's union background, and the GEO's dealing with Provost Andreas Congaleras. Why do you think the negotiations took a year? I don't know. That's a good question. I don't think it's more so about him. This is more so about the structure of the university and how they negotiate with unions. When you look at the negotiations that have gone on between GEO with SEIU, AFSCME, and now the non-tenure-track faculty union as well, all of these negotiations always go past the expiration date of the current contract, and they usually go within a year or so. And I think that's the way the university, that's their structure of how they bargain. I believe that's a protocol for them. I don't think it's because the two sides couldn't agree. Because, quite frankly, we came in the very first day on March 30th with our full proposal ready to bargain and saying, this is not set in stone. We're willing to bargain with you if you come to the table ready. And they didn't start bargaining with us or show us their full proposal until the end of June. Taking a stand. Hundreds of area high school students joined 17-minute protest against gun violence, some at risk of discipline. In Champaign and Urbana, hundreds of high school students walked out of class just before 10 a.m. Wednesday and joined a 17-minute peaceful protest inspired by the kids from Parkland, Florida. In Monticello, more than 50 students gathered in the cafeteria as their peers read the names of those who lost their lives during last month's school shooting at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School. And in Tolono, Aubrey Whalen decided to make a statement on her own. When 10 a.m. approached, the Unity High School freshman got up from her seat in class and walked outside, like thousands of others in schools across the country. But not without a warning first, she said. My teacher was like, you realize you're going to get in trouble, don't you? Whalen said later, I said, this is my First Amendment right. When Whalen got outside, she found herself alone, the only student in a high school of 500-plus to join Wednesday's national walkout. I feel bad for the Parkland kids and their families, she said. I'm doing it out of respect, not just to walk out or be rebellious. She was far from alone Wednesday. Here's a glimpse of what happened elsewhere around the area. Champaign, shortly after 10 a.m., dozens of Centennial students poured out of the high school's doors, waving signs that read, Never Again, and chanting for more gun control laws. After organizers spoke, Senior Valina Green called for a moment of silence in remembrance of the Parkland victims. Not one more life lost, she said, not one more. I thought it went really well, organizer Julianne Zhu said. The group and I were worried about not having enough support coming out, especially since there were threats of social probation and unexcused absences. When I saw everyone coming out, I almost cried. Student Angela Maligna was moved. This shows how much we care about each other and about every single student out there. It's not only for us, but for everyone who isn't here. A similar large gathering happened outside Central High School, where students held a large banner with the names of the Parkland victims and the hashtag Never Again. Across town at Next Generation Academy, middle school students like 13-year-old Shreya Sood felt the call to join in. Even though this isn't happening in our city currently, and just because it hasn't happened yet, doesn't mean it won't, Sood said. Urbana. An estimated half of the 1,100 students at Urbana High School were joined by more than 100 adults at a mostly silent demonstration in Carl Park. I'm very proud of how they handled things this morning, said School Board President John Dimmitt. It harkens back to when I went to the candlelight service for Kent State in May 1970. This was better than that. State Representative Carol Ammons, whose son attends UHS, had tears streaming down her face afterwards. "I could hold it together until they took the names away," she said of the students who held sheets with the names of the Parkland students killed. "That's when you realize that these children are gone forever. They're not coming back." As the students streamed out of Urbana High School at 10 a.m., adults formed a corridor along the sidewalk at Carl Park. They applauded and shouted, "We're so proud of you. Way to go, Urbana." Danville. Danville High School students held their walkout at 1:40 p.m. so that College Express students could participate. Under the supervision of staff, the majority of the student body filed out of the school and onto the football field. Many of them wearing orange t-shirts that read, "Students stand up, never again, in time for change" on the back. Some held signs that read, "Books, not bullets," and one life is worth more than all the guns on earth. And many chanted, "Enough is enough," and "Hey, hey, ho, ho, gun violence has got to go." At 1:50 p.m., organizers of the student-driven effort stood on the bleachers and held a 17-minute program. "After Columbine, we said never again. After Sandy Hook, we said never again. After Parkland, we said never again. How many more people have to die before we actually do something about gun control in America?" said juniors Lexi Arnett and Elisa Garza. Since January 1st, there have been 45 mass shootings, 4,675 injuries, and 2,742 deaths due to guns. They said, of the deaths, 117 were children under 11, and 522 were ages 12 to 17. "These kids should be looking forward to spring break, but unfortunately that's not the case," said sophomore Trinity Smith. "A child's biggest fear when coming to school should be that they won't pass that big test or have to run the mile in PE. But instead, in 2018, the biggest fear is that we will have to barricade the doors or run for our lives. By walking out, we are saying enough is enough." Champaign County. The dozen St. Joseph Ogden High School students who walked out were rerouted by administrators to the auditorium rather than outdoors. Principal Gary Page said officials decided to go that route due to safety concerns. That was a huge concern for a lot of schools. At Heritage High School, close to 40 students left school and walked to the school's football field, where they held a moment of silence, displayed signs of support, and took a group photo. "We thank our students for the way they conducted themselves today while allowing their civic voices to be heard," the district posted on Twitter. Paxton. About 15 to 20 students at Paxton Buckley Lota Junior High School took part in Wednesday's walkout, despite a warning from the district. Superintendent Cliff McClure said the district respects students' First Amendment rights, but those who participated could face discipline per policy because their actions were considered a disruption of the school day. Vermilion County. At 10 a.m., small groups of Hoopston, Westville, Georgetown, Ridge Farm, and Bismarck Henning, Rossville, Alvin students joined their peers nationwide. In Hoopston, middle and high school students stood peacefully behind the building by the track for about 17 minutes, then returned to class. "We understand that our students may be feeling anxiety, fear, and even anger about gun violence in schools," Superintendent Susie Hesser wrote in a short note to parents about the walkout. "We respect the right of our students to advocate for causes that are important to them and support their efforts to do so in an authorized and orderly manner while at school." Georgetown Ridge Farm students gathered around two benches in front of the school. "They were standing up for the Parkland students," Principal Kevin Thomas said, adding administrators supported their peaceful protest. "This is important to everyone, and it feels important that our students had a voice." We have some area update news. Court circuit riding in hopes of transparency. Illinois Supreme Court justices will leave the comfort of their Springfield surroundings to hear arguments today in two cases in Urbana. The circuit riding is part of an effort to create more transparency in the court system and help the public understand the high court's works. The majority of the audience today at Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, 500 South Goodwin Avenue, Urbana, will be middle school, high school, and U of I law students. Tickets have already been doled out. Oral arguments are slated to begin at 10:30 a.m. in the case of Douglas County regarding a constitutional issue. The other deals with Freedom of Information Act requests. Illinois Supreme Court Justice Lloyd A. Carmire, a U of I graduate, said bringing arguments to the citizenry helps demystify the process. The Douglas County case involves John Plank's 2016 felony arrest for driving under revocation while operating a bicycle powered by a gas motor. Judge Rick Brock granted Plank's motion to dismiss on the grounds that the definition of a low-speed gas bicycle was unconstitutionally vague. The state appealed, and because an issue of constitutionality is at stake, the appeal skips the appellate court and goes directly to the Supreme Court. The second case, Institute of Justice et al. Versus the Department of Financial and Professional Regulation, is the consolidation of two cases. In both, the plaintiff sought copies under the Freedom of Information Act of complaints filed with the Department of Financial and Professional Regulation against licensed professionals, cosmetologists, and hair braiders in one case and a structural engineer in the other case. The department denied the FOIA requests, and the plaintiffs filed complaints in the trial court to compel the release of the documents they wanted. While the lawsuits were pending, the Illinois General Assembly amended the Barber Cosmetology Aesthetics, Hair Braiding, and Nail Technology Act and the Civil Administrative Code to provide that complaints against licenses on file with the department are for the confidential use of the department and shall not be disclosed. The issue for the High Court is whether the amended versions of the Act and the Code apply to requests made before their enactment, but which were not fulfilled. The appellate court ruled that the amended statutes apply. The plaintiffs are appealing. The event can be heard via live stream bit.ly/2GCDYTY. The Q&A session will follow oral arguments. Online survey for public expression. Residents are encouraged to express via online survey on Urbana's website what they want in their next city administrator. The city put out the survey Wednesday, and it will be open through Monday. At 6 p.m. Tuesday, a public forum with the four finalists will be held at the ILEAS Training Center, 1701 East Main Street, Urbana. Mayor Diane Marlin noted that the public forum is on the same day as the statewide primary election, but said it was the only option when coordinating the finalists' schedules. Before the public forum, the candidates will be interviewed in person on Monday and Tuesday. The only Illinois resident among the finalists is Elizabeth Hannon, who is in her fifth year as Urbana's finance director. The other finalists are John Burt, town manager of Groton, Connecticut, Angel Jones, senior consultant and project manager with NOVAD Management Consulting, and Carol Mitten, deputy manager of Arlington, Virginia. City receives a AAA debt rating. The city announced Wednesday that it received AAA debt ratings from two financial groups. Both Fitch Ratings and Moody's Investors Services gave Champaign the highest possible ratings. The city's revenue and expenditure frameworks, liability burden, and operating performance factored into Fitch's decision. Moody's noted the city's economy and tax base, debt burden, and financial practices related to pension contributions. We have some sports news. Underwood lands NCAA tournament TV gig. When the first round NCAA tournament games tip off today, starting with Oklahoma against Rhode Island at 11:15 a.m., a familiar voice in these parts will get the chance to showcase his skills to a nationwide audience. Illinois men's basketball coach Brad Underwood, who has spent the early part of the week out recruiting, will be in Atlanta today and Friday, serving as a guest studio analyst for Turner Sports and a CBS Sports during the NCAA tournament, which will be broadcast on CBS, TBS, TNT, and True TV. The first-year Illini coach isn't coaching a team in the NCAA tournament for the first time in his head coaching career, after he led Stephen F. Austin to the NCAA tournament from 2014 to 2016 and Oklahoma State in 2017. But he'll provide in-studio analysis of the games from Atlanta today and Friday alongside host Casey Stern and fellow analysts Brendan Haywood, Candace Parker, the News Gazette's All-State Player of the Year in 2003 and 2004 after her stellar high school career at Naperville Central, and Seth Davis today. Underwood didn't guide Illinois to the NCAA tournament in his first season in charge, with the Illini finishing 14-18 and losing on the first day of the Big Ten tournament last month. Once Underwood's guest analyst duties are done, a close friend of his will fill the role, South Carolina coach Frank Martin, who had Underwood on his staffs at South Carolina and Kansas State before Underwood's head coaching career started, will work as a guest analyst this Saturday and Sunday. Special report, Militia Mystery. Bombing suspects group may plan anti-government protest. Before Michael B. Harry's arrest Tuesday on federal charges in connection with a bombing in Minnesota and an attempted bombing in Champaign, his anti-government militia group planned to hold a protest Saturday in Harry's Ford County hometown of Clarence, opposing the FBI and local law enforcement abuse of the community's citizens. "We plan to cook out and serve food," said a March 10th post on mymilitia.com under the screen name Illinois Patriot. "Please come and let the FBI know that breaking in doors, coercing searches and seizures, wiretaps and other such action is not acceptable in America. We are desperately hoping for some size to the crowd. Less than a week earlier, Harry's organization, the White Rabbit 3% Illinois Patriot Freedom Fighters Militia, also known as the White Rabbits, posted a YouTube video in which its ski mask-wearing members requested other militia groups across the nation join them in helping them take our town back. Ford County Sheriff Mike Duran said he was unaware of Harry's organization and its contacts with our other militia groups. Noren said Wednesday he remains concerned about the organization, even though Harry and three other members, all from Clarence, had been taken into federal custody for possession of a machine gun, a charge intended to hold them while the government seeks additional charges. "Yeah, I'm still concerned about it because you have no idea what could happen," Doran told News Gazette Media's Ford County Record. "I know Harry has had contacts in different states, and we are aware of his contacts with other militia groups. So it is a concern that other people not knowing the situation may come to the Ford County area to conduct operations, militia-type operations here in Ford County. That is a concern, but we are aware of it." Doran added that if the protest goes on as planned, he'll head over that way and make sure things stay peaceful. Harry, a former Ford County Sheriff's deputy and one-time Libertarian candidate for sheriff, is believed to have been the leader of the White Rabbits, whose members wear ski masks, boots, olive-colored shirts and pants, and a round patch depicting a white rabbit and the phrase, "Ain't no fun when the rabbit got the gun." The group practices armed resistance, anything from simply marching or protesting with a weapon in hand to actively resisting government authority. But the group claims it does not condone acts of violence, such as terrorism, lynching, or rioting. "We don't do terrorism, we don't do assassination, we don't murder policemen. That's not the kind of revolution this is," a White Rabbits member says on one YouTube video. "You don't necessarily have to have a weapon to belong." The member continues, "If you're brave and you're committed to liberty, that's all we're going to require of you. Liberties are on the line." The four White Rabbits members charged by the U.S. government, the 47-year-old Harry, along with Michael McWhorter, 29, Joe Morris, 22, and Ellis E.J. Mack, 18, are believed to have been responsible for at least two acts of terrorism, the August 15, 2000 firebombing at the Dar al-Farouk Islamic Center in Bloomington, Minnesota, and the November 7, 2017 attempted firebombing of the Women's Health Practice 2125 South Neal Street in Champaign. Harry is also suspected of placing multiple explosive devices at a neighbor's property on Main Street in Clarence in February and sending an anonymous tip to the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and Explosives. Harry is currently charged in Ford County Circuit Court with the assault of the man on whose property the devices were found. It was following that February incident that Harry and his group went to YouTube to express their frustrations with the federal and local law enforcement agencies that were investigating. Calling it the Clarence Crisis, the White Rabbits said the constitutional rights of their members and Clarence's citizens were violated when agents would not allow them onto their own properties as the investigation was underway. They sealed off the north end of town, a White Rabbits member says on the YouTube video. They searched a lot of properties with no consent, no warrant, no nothing. They told property owners to get lost. They blockaded driveways, wouldn't let people get home. They claimed it was because of some kind of bomb scare. They claimed to have detonated some devices up there, but we don't really know of any such thing to be a fact. It's just what we were told. But definitely people in the community were alarmed at the intrusion. People were definitely upset over what happened. Federal authorities then visited Clarence again, this time seizing some weapons and cell phones from a White Rabbit member's home, according to the YouTube video. We're asking for militia support to come and help us with the situation, because we feel like, first off, it's really bad precedent, and secondly, all of our liberties are on the line. If they can come into a town like ours and just rule it like they have, then they can do this anywhere. We need you to come and stand with us. This doesn't stand. The White Rabbits claim that about half of the homes in the small, unincorporated rural community of Clarence have at least one household member who belongs to their group. The organization claims that the federal government used this whole pipe bomb situation at the Harry's neighbor property solely as a pretext to go after our organization. They became aware of our organization. They became aware that it was gaining some power and some traction, and that our little community actually represented a lot of the people in the organization, and they decided to crush that, to put an end to that by terrorizing the people, a White Rabbits member says in a YouTube video, and that just absolutely cannot stand. We need to at least have some kind of protest to show that this doesn't stand in America. We need to have some kind of protest to come out of this whole situation. That's really what we need. Some way that we can speak back to this and say, hey, this is not acceptable. You don't come into our communities and threaten our mothers. You don't come in here and threaten our fathers. You don't come in here and threaten people. You don't seize their cell phones. You don't just run wild over a whole town. The White Rabbits member who appeared on all the group's YouTube videos never discloses his name, but in one he does disclose that he is a former police officer. Meanwhile, the writer with the username Illinois Patriot on MyMilitia.com says on one post that he was a 1998 Libertarian Party candidate for sheriff and served on the Ford County Board of Assessments as a Libertarian while also being a Waco protester. All of these are elements of Harry's storied past. The White Rabbits believe socialism and Marxism is encroaching upon America. You can read what we believe on our website, a White Rabbits member says, on one YouTube video clip. There are some kind of inflammatory language on there, but if you read that we're really about, it shouldn't be controversial to any Americans. We stand against corruption. We stand against the regulation and taxation that's taken over this country, the political correctness, just plain socialism, that's creeping up everywhere we look. If you feel like your freedoms are being curtailed and every day you're getting a little further away from the country you grew up in, then you're probably already one of us. Suburban Express censured. Group weighs in on China ad months after controversy. Urbana's Human Relations Commission approved a statement Wednesday condemning Suburban Express, a local private transportation company, for an advertisement last December widely considered to be racist. The statement comes more than 3 months after Suburban Express released this ad, which listed on its benefits, including passengers like you, you won't feel like you're in China when you're on our buses. We, the Urbana Human Relations Commission, consider that the advertisement, whether or not it meant to be humorous, is an attempt to attract customers who prefer not to share a bus ride with people of Chinese nationality or heritage, and that in this way it supports and enables anti-Chinese sentiment and prejudice, said the statement, which was approved by everyone present. It follows a subpoena for company records issued in December by Illinois Attorney General Lisa Madigan, which Suburban Express has complied with. The Attorney General's office is still reviewing these documents for any violations of the Illinois Human Rights Act, which says that public accommodations cannot be denied to someone based on certain factors, including race and national origin. No update at this point, said Annie Thompson, the Attorney General's press secretary. Commission member Fran Rigberg Baker said they wanted to make it clear that they stand with those who are concerned about the ad, including the University of Illinois student government and top U of I officials who have condemned it. The issue isn't really free speech. It's an indication that there may be discrimination or encouragement of discrimination or something like that, she said. So it's something that we have to be concerned about, and we want people to know that we're concerned about it. The commission's statement encouraged anyone who may have been discriminated against to report it to the Champaign County Community Relations Office. Since Suburban Express's office is in Champaign, or to the Urbana Human Relations Commission. The business is headquartered in Champaign, said Commission member Fran Rigberg Baker. But they do business in Urbana. They have pickups in Urbana. Suburban expressed apologies for the ad and again for its apology, which has also been criticized. Owner Dennis Teppin could not be reached for comment. The company has also added a statement of inclusion to its website, saying that it doesn't discriminate. Rigberg Baker said the commission statement came more than 3 months after the ad because of various delays. We've been working on it since last December. There was a canceled meeting, then there was an issue with the Open Meetings Act, and it wasn't on the agenda, so it got delayed, she said. We're going ahead with it, but it's the nature of our body to move a little slowly, unfortunately. Don't blink or you might miss it. World's shortest St. Patrick's Day returns to downtown. It's not too late to get in shape for Saturday's St. Patrick's Day celebration, the official kind. Urbana Mayor Diane Marlin took to the elliptical machine to prepare for her role as Grand Marshal of the second annual World's Shortest St. Patrick's Day Parade, which steps off at 5 p.m. It starts on Main Street and extends one entire block from Broadway to Race. A test run of the route to see if it was doable found it to be free of obstacles and mostly flat. It can be completed in just about a couple of minutes, even with a few breaks thrown in. Be sure to have your fitness software ready so you'll get credit for the extra steps. Among the members who took part last year were the Marching Illini, who followed the pedestrian approach, and a couple of others who decided they'd ride the route. The Public Works Department came with a truck, and the CU Mass Transit District sent its minibus. The Urbana Fire Department is a perennial parade pleaser. Marlin, on the other hand, is really in training for something a tad more challenging, the Christie Clinic Illinois Half Marathon. I haven't walked 13 miles in a time yet, she said. I do walk around Meadowbrook Park a lot because it's close to where I live. This has been Mary Mortland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, March 15, 2018. Please stay tuned for Part 2.